This is the Ned and Josh podcast.
Injured in the workplace? Call John Little at Malaganas Edwards Johnson.
Hit 104.7.
Josh, it's funny when you see a kid learn a lesson for the first time.
Yes.
And honestly, this is kind of a weird thing. So I was at the airport and it was like me and this little girl. I think she would have been at most 4 or 5.
Yep.
Probably 4. I think her and I were the only two that saw it. She did it and I saw it, but I don't think any other adult saw it.
Mm.
And she looked at me, was like, please don't tell anyone.
Yeah.
With her little 4-year-old eyes. And I was like,
I gotcha.
I'm too tired to, I'm too tired to get involved in your life.
Yes.
It's fine. What happened was yesterday I was coming back from Brisbane. I was in the airport. I checked on some luggage and I got back quite late.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd had a pretty big weekend and I was just ready to go home. And I was waiting at the carousel and they were going around and there was these 3 kids. This little girl was one of them and they were playing around in the carousel, jumping up on the conveyor belt, which...
Dangerous.
Their parents
don't do that.
Were just on their phones.
I
kind of want to be like, hey...
Maybe tell them to stop that.
I don't want to tell all your kids off.
Yeah.
You need to tell them to get off that.
Well, someone from the airport's going to.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And then that'll be more about you than them.
And yeah, that's going to be a worse telling off than you just going, hey, get off that. But the little girl wasn't on the conveyor belt because I think she was a little bit scared, but she was certainly playing around. And you know... if something obviously bad happens, they've got to have an emergency brake on it.
Yeah.
On the conveyor belt.
So if one of the kids playing on the conveyor belt, for example, falls over.
Yeah. What they were doing was there's
that's
a system
in place there.
For that. Yeah. There's a big button and it's right on the ground. So I think you can just kick it.
Yeah.
So it stops. The little girl.
Oh, no.
Was running around.
Mm-hmm.
She was playing. She had her little luggage bag on there and she was sliding around on it. And I started looking at her because she was flicking her feet around pretty willy-nilly.
Mm.
And kicked the button.
Was the button kick intentional curiosity? I wonder what happens if I push this button. Or do you think it was errant foot kicking mistake?
I don't want to get sued for liability by a 4-year-old, but there was intent behind the kick.
Okay, it was an intentional kick.
She was like,
kick.
Ooh, yep. A button. That's not anywhere else. I wonder what will happen. Kicked it. Everything
stops.
The big light comes up.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Everyone's like, oh, what happened?
Yep.
And she looks around and the only person that she can see,
that's when the look
she
happened.
Looks at me and she's like, please don't tell anyone. And I was like, if it was any other day, maybe, but I'm so tired. I just want,
what happened? I don't know.
And they came down and the girl walked way away from the button.
Oh,
and the person came down and that, like the someone from the airport, and they like had to get it started again. And people were groaning, going, this always bloody happens. Rada.
I was the button kid.
Well, everyone's been the button kid. You need to find out. There's always a big red button that you're like, I wonder what that does.
My dad used to be like, if there's a button, Joshua's going to push it. Oh, he's just, blah, blah, blah. And I thought to myself the other day, I wonder why that is. Because that's like even as an adult now, if I see a button in like a room, I'm like, I wonder what that actually does. I was at the gym the other morning, like before the show, and I was trying to work out how to turn the lights on because they kept turning off on the timer.
Yeah.
And there was like a big red button. And I'm like, that's not the button, but I still want to see if it's the button.
Yeah. What is that button?
I've worked out what it is.
Yeah.
Because my friends are having babies now. The Fisher and Price sets that you get all have buttons on them.
Yeah, they're big
buttons.
Just
things that make noises, things to touch.
Yeah.
We're teaching kids from such a young age, if there's a button,
it might
make a moo cow sound.
Exactly right. There's been times where I've been personally affected by you pressing buttons.
Yes.
Look, but I would love to know on 131060. I feel like if you really dig deep, I mean, I've got stories. Everyone's got a story about a big red button. Get on the phone, 131060. What big red button did you press and what happened?
This is most likely going to be a story from when you're a kid.
Yes.
Or maybe your kids have done this and you've had to explain to someone at the supermarket why their loading dock door's now just permanently open.
Yeah.
I don't know what it might be, but you're right. This I think it's because of the baby toys all having buttons, but we all go...
It's a universal thing.
Big red button.
This is the Ned and Josh podcast. Hit 104.7.
Yeah. Julie's on the line from Morning Asset. How are you, Julie?
I'm well, thanks. How are you going?
Yeah, not
very
too bad.
Good,
thank
Julie.
You, Julie. Now, is this a button you've pushed?
Oh, it's hilarious. I'm the first aid officer at work, and we're part of a massive strata title complex that has about 4 buildings around us.
Right.
Anyway, said, we've got a brand new defibrillator. Make sure you check it out so you know where it is in the event of an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
So, absolutely got there, opened the door, walked into the corridor. So, how do you do this? Press this. Opened it up.
Oh, no.
This huge alarm goes off, and people start running out thinking that someone's in cardiac arrest.
No.
And then I literally find out you don't touch it unless someone is in cardiac arrest. So I had to send a very apologetic email to the whole strata title complex. Yeah.
What they should have done is like hold like a town meeting, and then like it's like a for shame thing when they used to shame people in medieval times. Like, Julie, why don't you let the people know the lesson you've learnt today? We don't touch the defibrillator unless someone's dying.
You know what, Julie? I find so fascinating about this though, as a workplace with a defibrillator here, that how many people came running as you just described.
Yeah.
It was funny because when we got our machine, I was looking around work. I think everyone wanted someone to have a heart attack just so someone could use it. Pretend I'm on ER. This will be so much fun.
You're listening to the Ned and Josh podcast, Hit 104.7.
Ned, over the weekend, I participated in what can only be described as the worst case of exercise laziness that's ever existed.
Okay, what happened?
So I caught up with our mate Mick, and we decided he's got a brand new apartment in Belconnen. He wanted me to come and see it.
Is it nice?
It's really, really nice. It's got a great view of Lake Ginninderra. And then we saw the lake, and Mick goes,
I was really going to say what road it was on. I was like, you know what? That's too much color.
I'll give you the unit number if you'd like. nice view of Lake Ginninderra. And he was like, well, let's go for a walk. And I was like, yeah, right.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it looks actually really nice on Saturday afternoon, weather-wise. And so we did. And we went for a little bit of a walk and just having a chat, catching up about life, talking about, you know, new apartments because I just bought mine, all this sort of stuff.
I really feel like I missed out. I mean, I was at one of my best friend's weddings. Yeah, so
it was a good chat. It was a good chat. Anyway, so probably about 40 minutes into the walk, the plan was always to end after the loop of the lake at the lighthouse and just have a beer.
Have a beer.
Yeah, and then just go our separate ways. That was the whole point of the trip. 40 minutes in, we're not even halfway around the lake.
Right.
And we've gone, well, how long? Because we looked and saw there was still so much more of the lake to go before we'd have looped this lake.
Yeah.
Like, what do we do? Is there a bridge halfway that we can just tap out on?
Yeah.
Anyway, probably about 30 seconds after that discussion happened, one of those little signposts that tell you how long the walk is to go come up.
Yep.
And in hours, it was like another hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And Mick and I just looked at each other and went, well, that beer's not going to drink itself. And we turned around and went back the way we'd come because we didn't want to continue the walk around the lake because we wanted to have a beer.
Look, I don't blame you. But I also don't commit myself to any kind of fitness.
I thought to myself at that moment, I'm like, this is ridiculously sad. Yeah. This is literally us waving the white flag and walking because we would rather have a schooner in this beautiful weather.
It's like runners do want to get to the finish line, but it's not like you've made the finish line so appealing to what you actually want to do because this is it. Like marathon sprinters, they love running. They love the adrenaline high they get from it. It's like such an amazing feeling, but the finish line to them is just like, oh, the race is done. The finish line for you is the only thing you want.
Yeah,
none of the part in between is any kind of fun.
If we can get to the beer as quickly as possible.
Exactly, yeah.
Maybe even a bowl of chips on the side. Let's make that happen.
Yeah.
And so when we got to that sign, it was like, kidding ourselves.
Yeah.
This walk was not about what today's about. No. It's about ending up at the lighty.
We're cutting our losses. We'll go back. How far was the walk back? How long were you walking
for? It was
exactly
the same. We were walking for well over an hour. So I'm saying I earned that bowl of chips.
I was going to say, I know that to a lot of people will be like, oh, giving up.
Yeah, giving up halfway around the lake.
To me, that sounds like a full day's worth of exercise.
So look, let me just say, if you are running any kind of a fitness class, F45, Hit Republic, Orange Theory, anything, never have like a sausage sizzle as like the end of the class. You know, oh, we're celebrating being open for a year. Every class that happens today, everyone will get a free sausage at the end. Because people just want to skip straight to that. That's what I've learned. That's what I've discovered over the weekend.
Well, we haven't discovered that. We've discovered that you want to do that.
No, people, everyone. Food's a bad motivator.
This is the Ned and Josh podcast. Hit 104.7.
Josh, last week, I can't even remember at what time, but I think I was looking up jewelry because I wanted to find out how much. I think I saw like a rapper or someone famous wearing like a bit of jewelry. And I was like, you know what? I want to see like how much that costs.
It's always fascinating. Like I saw a video the other day of Biebs and he was wearing like this chain. It honestly looked crap.
Yeah.
And then I saw like it was the chain's like worth $280,000.
It's insane.
I was just like, that's amazing to me.
And it also is crazy to me that it's like, because when I see like rappers like Gucci Mane and he's like, this is like a $750,000 ring.
Mm.
It's like, why, dude?
Yeah.
This, I'd just be so, a ring.
I'm so nervous about dropping my iPhone.
Yeah.
And I think, imagine if you had something worth like a house on your hand. Like, I mean, you could lose that.
That's what I mean. Granted, it looks sick. It does look cool. But at the same time, it's like there's so many other things that you could have that would be, I think, cooler than having a ring.
I think you're buying $750,000 worth of responsibility.
Exactly.
That's what I think
you buy.
I don't like that.
Anyway, I found out the ring. No worries. It was. I was only looking for a little while. But because of targeted ads... and because I'm logged into everything on the, because I'm pretty sure I did it in the on the computer here in the studio,
right? Yeah,
doing important
show
things.
Show research,
yeah, exactly. Of course, it is now for whatever reason decided, despite everything else I've googled in my life, that Facebook has gone, well, this guy's clearly looking in the market for $20,000 rings and jewelry.
Yeah.
Which I am not.
No.
That would essentially be all of my money.
Unless you've done some kind of a deal where you're getting paid substantially more than me.
That's why I'm bringing it up.
We're not having $20,000 rings as some kind of an expenditure item.
Exactly right. This is the thing. You also can't really tell Facebook when to stop showing you ads because that's what everyone would do if that was the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm now stuck in the weird position where I'm getting ads that are like rubbing in how not wealthy I am.
It's like, it's out of your pay range.
Because it's like, hey, they're suggesting stuff that's like, hey, if you like that ring, here's one that's only $50,000 that you could get. And it's like, well, okay. It's a weird thing to have to say to an advertiser, but it's like, I'm too poor. Stop advertising to me.
It'd be great if you could have an opt-out button just based on income.
Exactly,
you just like, you know what, only show me stuff that I realistically could afford. Because right now, even for me, I'm looking at ads at the moment because I was looking at TVs the other day, just for like Sony Bravias and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, nah, I'm looking for the Sanyo TVs, not the Sony TVs.
So let's chill out.
Let's calm down a bit.
It's like the exact opposite of what you do, because I was just in Brisbane and I walked past a whole bunch of like the Louis Vuitton and the St. Laurent shops.
Yeah.
It's like if they spruiked you on the street, instead of like stopping people from coming in, they were like, hey, come on in, come on in.
Afternoon shoppers. We've got a fantastic $7,500 handbag in here. Come on in, check it out. Fine leather.
And you had to say on the street, actually, sorry, I'm actually too poor for this shop.
Oh, I need the $7,500 for like all of my bills this year, not just one handbag.
The way it works now is great, where they just don't let you in.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I want Facebook to start doing.
A bouncer system. The only thing that I would take any kind of comfort in with this is, you know how they're saying like Facebook can know everything about you? Obviously not. They're not in your bank account. That's for damn sure.
This is the Ned and Josh podcast. Hit 104.7.
Every Monday night, I host trivia at PJ's in the city.
Yeah.
It's a great time. Come on down.
It's free.
You can win free beer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's free, and then you can also win free beer.
Exactly
anyway,
right.
This is now just an unsolicited plug, so I'm going to stop. but there is something that I do. I take the same walk from the car park to PJ's every single week.
Okay.
Now, I'm not going to get super specific into the walk because I'm about to talk about a restaurant that's on the way to the walk.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's a very popular restaurant. I'm sure they do amazing cuisine because it just looks always full in there.
Yeah.
People seem to be very happy.
Yeah.
But it's one of those restaurants, and it's not unique by any stretch of the imagination, that has like a fish tank. And
oh, cool.
so you sort of go, oh, I'll have that fish or I'll have that crayfish or I'll have that, you know, like you see
fresh
them
from the tank.
You see them everywhere.
Yeah.
But what I've started to notice, probably the last three or four times I've hosted trivia, as I walk past this restaurant on the way there,
because
I love fish, so I take a look and I go, oh, look at all the fish. They're just swimming around.
Very cute.
On the way back from trivia, which is certainly after the meal service of dinner has concluded, there are less fish in the tank. And it's making me sad every week.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do about it because there's nothing I can do about it. I understand this is it. I eat meat, so I can't. I'm not a hypocrite.
Yeah.
I get that this is what happens. I don't like meeting the fish and then walking back.
Yeah.
And I've never been to a restaurant where you could pick the fish because it just makes me... I don't like thinking about it that much.
Also, you don't have a palate that's refined enough to know what fresh fish tastes like.
No, exactly.
So someone could hand you a fish fillet and be like, sir, the barramundi, and you'd be like, oh, delicious.
All you need to do to feed me a fillet of fish and make me think it's cuisine from the upper echelons of society is just take the breadcrumbs off it.
Yeah, perfect.
And I'd be like, oh, that's wonderful.
Little tartare and some lemon.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, my God, fine dining.
Oh, fine dining. So I've never picked a fish out of the tank.
Yeah.
But I'm starting to... last night was the first time I've sort of consciously worked this out. And so on the way there, I tried not to look at the tank.
Yeah, good.
And then, but then I saw a fish like swim really excitedly in one direction. And mm-hmm. of course I looked because I like fish. And then on the way back, I mean, I can't say for sure, but I don't think he was in there anymore.
Well, that's it.
So yeah, I probably too much get up and go.
Someone saw him. They're like, that fish is energetic. Yeah. And I like some muscles on me. Out you go, bucko. You're too excited.
I have to walk a different way. I just can't not look at the tank.
Yeah, exactly. And if you want some more regularity, I don't know, buy a season pass to the zoo and just go and look at the aquarium. They'll always be there.
Yeah, no one's doing that there.
Yeah, okay.
This is the Ned and Josh podcast. Hit 104.7.
Ned, there has been a big history-making moment on Mars. In fact, it's history making for flight and space all together as a concept.
Well, you like flight.
I love
a plane aficionado.
They call it being an av geek. I wouldn't say I'm a full av geek because I'm a fan of this page on Facebook where people go down to the airport every day and take photos of planes.
Yeah.
I love looking at the photos, not going down there to take the photos. So that's the level. There's people way more into it than me, but I still enjoy that they're out there taking the photos.
Which is nice. It's good to know your limits.
I think there was a Globemaster that landed last night.
I don't know what that is.
It's either here nor there. It's a really big plane. But the point is, on Mars, they've managed to get a drone flying. It's the first flight, on a different planet.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's really cool. I wouldn't even think they'd be able to do it because I know, obviously, Mars has gravity, but a lot less. I feel like once you got kind of high enough
with the
drone.
Do you know that for sure?
Well, yeah, because that's how things work. It's like if you have a big mass, then it draws gravity to it. Like it has a center of gravity.
No, but I'm just saying, do you know that Mars has less gravity? Like you'd weigh less on Mars.
Well, yeah, because it would have less gravity.
Because I don't know that for sure.
Because it's a smaller planet than Earth.
Okay. That's fine. I don't know that for sure. I know you very well. I'm just interested how you know that so certainly.
I don't actually. Maybe it has
more.
Are
you basing this off the moon? Like where you go to the moon, you weigh less on the moon?
No, obviously the moon has way less because it's tiny, but I think Mars has less gravity. I actually don't know.
This is what I'm saying. Yeah. Just say stuff with authority and usually no one will question you.
Yeah, and I was like, I've got one or two sentences that could back up what I think, but I actually don't know.
I'm just interested. I'm just here to say this morning, I was thrilled about this, as we've said, bit of a nerd about flight and all that sort of thing. I love it. 39 seconds is how long it flew for.
Is that all it could fly for?
I don't know, but I'm just here to say that we shouldn't be celebrating that.
That's a test.
The Wright brothers, before we even knew what planes were, their one went for 12 seconds.
Yeah.
Certainly went for like three times longer. And we are 100 and something years down the path from those guys.
It's a little underwhelming.
No, it wasn't. It's barely a flight.
What did it do?
As you said, maybe it was just light and a gust of wind picked it up. Yeah. Do we know that it flew for sure? It only went for 39 seconds.
Maybe it was the exact opposite of what I said, and it was so heavy that it like only could fly for a bit, and the drum's like, oh God. The gravity's so extreme here, I've got to get back down.
You put normal Earth batteries in it, and they could only work for 39 seconds.
Exactly right.
No.
How long do you need it to be for you to celebrate?
I don't need scheduled passenger services.
Okay, good.
I don't need two airports and terminals and baggage handlers.
That won't ever happen.
But I probably need more than a minute. Okay. I'd say more than a minute.
Yeah. What if it only was up for 30 seconds, but it did one of the cool little drone flips that I see people do sometimes?
That'd be cool.
Yeah. That would be enough.
Or it delivered something, like a drone delivery service.
It just picked up a rock and took it to another rock.
I just think we got to be careful celebrating mediocrity. You know, like, what's this?
It's the first flight on a planet, so it's not mediocrity.
39 seconds. Yeah. Well, it's NASA's new motto, here for a good time, not a long time.
Yeah,
Come on. What are we doing?
You're listening to the Ned and Josh podcast, Hit 104.7.
Ned, there is obviously, if you've been paying attention to the news in the last probably 6-7 months, you might have seen the story about the fact that one of our shopping centres here in Canberra that shall remain nameless has apparently the most accident insurance claims of any car park in Australia.
That's true. That's a fact.
So we have some bad parking going on here in Canberra, mm-hmm. no doubt about it. Whether it's our fault, whether car parks are badly designed, I don't know. Maybe it's just a perfect storm of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I have seen some terrible parking here in Canberra. Some very, very selfish decisions made
mm-hmm.
where people will wait for way too long for an available car park close to the door when they really should just move on, try and find another car park.
I think if the person doesn't look like they're even close to wrapping it up, even if they're putting groceries in the back of their... If they don't look like they're going to be done within the next minute, you don't get to wait.
Don't wait. Don't wait because you're holding up 12, 13 cars behind you so you can get that primo park.
Exactly right.
Selfish behaviour. Anyway, the worst one is when somebody, for example, like has a car that's a little nice.
Yeah.
Because you don't see people with really nice cars doing that, what I'm about to explain, that often, because they've got the money for a really nice car.
Yeah.
Parking a kind of nice car across two car parks so no one can park next to you is the douchiest thing you can do in a car park, I think.
Exactly.
It is so rude to everybody else. You're taking up two parks to protect your admittedly nice, but not
that nice,
Bugatti Veyron nice. Yeah, like, you are just, you're carrying on. And I find myself thinking, geez, I wish I could leave a note or something just to say,
hey,
you're being an ass, and you shouldn't.
And your
do
car's
this.
Not that nice.
Yeah, car's not that nice. Get over it. All that sort of stuff. And just, there's really no correct mechanism, is there?
I suppose not.
Until saw what I've decided is my favorite thing I've ever seen online over the weekend when it comes to a little bit of car park revenge. So what it is basically this guy has printed off a bunch of like close-up images of either, I'm not sure whether it's the nun from like the Conjuring series or it's the girl from The Ring. It's just a really scary face, like close-up. That's what it is. And what he does is he gets a little bit of removable tape and just tapes it to the reverse camera of the car that's done this really inconsiderate thing.
Yeah.
So when the driver then goes to reverse,
that's so
up
funny.
On this screen is this horribly scary face real close up to the camera.
Yeah.
And you can only imagine they get like a little bit of a fright.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. The only thing I'm nervous about with this, because this seems like, to me, the perfect way to just make people a little more conscious about how inconsiderate they're being.
Yeah, give them a fright, but not ruin their day.
I just don't think it's a good idea to give people frights while they have an accelerator, like, right next to their foot. Because I feel like you're either going to reverse out, and just reverse out super quick into a pole or something.
Yep.
Or maybe you've accidentally put the car in drive, and you go forward into another car super quick. So I just think scares in the car are not a perfect system either. But this, I must admit, when I saw it, I was like,
it's pretty great.
I reckon it'd get people just checking their parking a little bit if this was potentially something that could happen.
Well, I certainly hope so, because that's it. The only thing I'll say is it doesn't really make your message all that clear. Whilst it gives them a bit of a spook, it doesn't really, like, unless they're like, oh, you know what, I should stop breaking into two graveyards at night. I knew I was going to get haunted.
Yeah,
it doesn't really
haunted.
That's it. It doesn't really paint the exact picture of, hey, you're parking inappropriately.
So the only problem I have here is that this would be a way to have a little bit of a message sent without having to have a confrontation.
Of course.
But the only way it works perfectly is if you stand next to the car and wait for the moment, and then when they're freaked out, you go, well, let me explain this to you.
There's a lesson here.
And I guarantee that will end in a confrontation.
Hit 104.7's Ned and Josh. This is the Ned and Josh podcast. Hit 104.7.
I don't subscribe to, like, when someone does something nice for their boyfriend or girlfriend and then, like, everyone's like, oh, making it hard for the rest of us.
Nah, plan better stuff.
Yeah. I don't hold yourself to other people's standard. B, think about doing nice stuff for your partner and then see, who cares?
You didn't have a C, did you?
No, your partner also shouldn't be seeing stuff online going, my boyfriend doesn't ever do that or my girlfriend never gets me nice stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't subscribe to it. Except when it's incredibly over the top, and I almost think that this is being done for a point. Because I feel like when nice stuff is done, it's not for any other reason than I would like to do something nice for someone. Until I see stories like this guy.
Before you tell the story, is money involved?
Yes. Money's always involved.
So they usually, when I see these stories and go, oh, for God's sake, the only time I ever go, for God's sake, is when money's involved.
Oh, because
it's just like a flaunting of how much money you have.
But it's just a nice act. I'll just steal it and do it. The money's the problem. I can't afford everything that people do online. But if someone's just doing a nice, thoughtful thing, I'm like, I'll just do that then.
Yeah, I'll steal the idea.
I'll just steal
the stuff.
No, I'll
like whatever the point. Oh, if someone got you a lovely necklace, I'll just steal a necklace.
I'll just steal the idea if it's free.
Yes, right.
I'll come up looking like a hero. No, it's a money thing. Of course, it's a money thing.
Mm-hmm.
There was a guy who's proposed to his girlfriend. Lovely. Usually buying a wedding ring. It was funny. I was having a conversation with a couple of my friends and their girlfriends over the weekend.
You went to a wedding over the weekend.
I went to a wedding, and there was, so obviously the conversation of engagement came up quite a bit. Mm. And the thought of like the ring, whilst it should be nice and there should be some money put into it, it shouldn't matter if it's like beautiful or whatever. It's more of like the act of going, hey, I would like to spend the rest of my life with you. Here is something that, over the years, we have been conditioned to think that you need.
Yeah, yeah.
Here is a ring that cost me 5 months' salary.
You know what's wild about it, though? I've had, like, literally 50-50 conversations with people about the importance of the ring, whether or not, like, the symbol of the other person going to find something that they think you'd like is nice, or whether get rid of that malarkey and just let me pick the ring, because I want to pick the ring I want, because I'm going to have to wear it for ages.
Exactly right. So it is a weird toss-up.
Yeah.
There's a guy who has managed to make everyone look bad, and you would need so much money for this. But what he's done, he's proposed to his girlfriend, and instead of pulling out like a little box and being like, here you go, he's pulled out like almost something you would see it in Meijer as a display rack of like four individual, or maybe it's even five individual fingers, little things that they've put a ring on. And he's gone, will you marry me? Pick your favorite.
Oh, my God.
I bought five rings. You can take it. Which one do you like the best? I've narrowed it down to five. You just have one. I'll take the rest back. I hope he's thinking that.
Oh, my God.
Why do that, dude?
Oh, that's so funny.
Why do that?
I actually love that idea.
I don't.
That's so great.
Well, I love it as someone who is about as far away from engaging, being engaged to someone as you can be, but I just don't like that that's out in the world now.
I think that's hilarious.
If this takes off as a trend, I guarantee, I don't know how my affairs are going to be ordered when I finally want to propose to someone, but I can't imagine they're going to be
buying five engagement rings.
Good enough to buy five. The way, actually, I tell you how this will go. It's like if my girlfriend, if I get down on one knee and I'm like, will you marry me, babe? Here's five rings. And she goes, oh my goodness, no, I'll have this one. Incredible. I can't wait to go home. Yeah. Oh, it's going to be such a special night for us both. I go, well, that's the thing. I've actually had to sell the house to get these rings. Once we take them back, we can get the house back. But for now, we are currently homeless.
Imagine if you just want all five. You know, I like all of them. I've got five fingers.
I'm like, all right, Thanos, chill out. You don't get all of them. You get one.
The only way I'll approve of this moving forward is if the proposal sounds a lot like this. It's like, and so with that all of said, Jane Janison, will you spend the rest of your life with me? Yes, I will.
Let's go shopping.
And then you just get the showcase of rings.
This is the Ned and Josh podcast. Hit 104.7.
Maybe if you have a tattoo that you don't necessarily love anymore, this will make you feel better about it.
Okay.
There's a mum, and I've seen this as like a little bit of a trend, but there's a mum who wanted to get one of her son's drawings tattooed on her. Sometimes I little girl wrote like daddy in her handwriting, and then the guy got it tattooed on him.
That's
like
so
exactly
lovely.
In her handwriting, which is really, really cute. And it's like a pretty, like it's, I'm having a look at the drawing that this kid did. It's not bad. It's kind of like a skull. It's like a rock that looks like a little bit like a skull. And then there's like palm trees next to it. And there's like a little house next to it. It's kind of cool. It's a pretty good drawing.
Looks like you'd see that on a Thrills Company t-shirt or something like that.
It is kind of like a surf brandy. And the palm tree is like very kid-esque. So it's very cute. And she was like, my son Kevin, age 6, drew this. And she was like, yeah, I got it. And people were like, it's a really cool tattoo. No worries. Fantastic. He drew it in his art class, apparently, at school.
Right.
So she was like, oh, I've got to show off my son's artwork, apparently, forever.
Mm-hmm.
And she came to find out, because I think the school might have called her, but it turns out that Kevin, her son, who's 6, who drew this, actually didn't draw it. He just took it from school and came home, and his mum was like, wow, this is amazing, Kevin.
So mum's got the tattoo.
Of just a random kid's drawing now. So now it's lost any kind of relevancy because Kevin didn't draw it at all.
I've never understood tattoos in terms of legality because, like, some people can get the Superman logo tattooed on them, all that sort of stuff, and then, you know, you see them in movies and stuff, and there it is.
They've got
it,
yeah.
It's like, do they have to ask permission to then have their arm in a movie? Or is it like once it's on your body, it's like...
It's your property. It's you.
I'm so confused.
It's like a birthmark.
But my point is, this kid should be able to sue. It's his artwork. His or her artwork. Whoever did this drawing originally...
Yeah.
That the kids stole it from?
Sue them.
Sue them.
Plagiarism. Yeah. Exactly right. They got no credit whatsoever.
You reproduce my artwork without my express permission?
Yeah.
Disgraceful.
I think you would have to admit if you were the kid, I mean, not that the kid would sue them, but I think like if you were anyone who was upset, you would be like, this lady's got it way worse than
I do. She's now got another kid's artwork tattooed on
it. Just have to lie, wouldn't you?
You'd also find out exactly how much you liked the artwork.
Yeah.
Because if you were getting it because you thought, oh, it's my kids, that's pretty great.
Yeah.
And then now that it's some other kids, you regret the tattoo.
Mm.
Are you kind of saying... I didn't actually think it was that good to start with.
That's very, like, very funny.
Like a lot of parents kind of, you know, well, they ham up how good their kids' drawings are.
Because I'll see
a drawing of a friend's kid and I'll be like, hey, it's not that good.
Yeah. And it's not that good.
It's not that good.
It's fine. But like I said, it's a 6-year-old's drawing. It's not great.
I did this once in school.
What?
There was a picture of The Rock that was like hand drawn, like pencil.
Yeah.
And I worked out that if I made it small enough and printed it off on like the carbon printer at school, like the printer you have in an office, it looked like I'd actually drawn it.
Yeah.
And I showed it to my mum, and she just was obsessed. She was like, this is so amazing.
Yeah,
like, geez, I didn't know you could draw like this, blah, blah, blah. I was in about year five.
Yeah.
And then I felt so bad that I admitted to the fact I just printed this off the internet. Mum went, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Just wanted to see how long you'd lie to your mother. She can't draw like this.
That was the Ned and Josh, Ned and Josh podcast.
Podcast. John Little, your Canberra Region Workers' Compensation Lawyer. MEJ.com.au.
Hit 104.7.